Yeah, you can't make a 2D, a 3D image too. You can't. I don't know how to say that. What am I supposed to say?
I don't know.
No, we should take like a, because it's x-rays are 2D, right?
Yeah.
Welcome back to Horse Talk. This is our second session with Dr. Rice. Very excited. We're going to talk about pre-purchase exams. And I know that some people have been emailing us a lot to talk about pre-purchases, especially Sammy. I know Sammy's listening out in Wyoming, so you can kind of learn about why and why not to do a pre-purchase exam. So, Dr. Rice, we both kind of talked before we started the cast about how we do pre-purchase exams, and I'm not surprised, but they're very similar. So why don't we just kind of, why don't we tell an owner what a pre-purchase exam is versus what it's not, and then we can just kind of go through what a pre-purchase exam should look like. And I think these are like the number one or number two most sued over things that veterinarians
right.
do. If you see your veterinarian, they should, it should be very similar to what we're going to talk about.
Right. It's really just us looking at a horse, you know, on a particular day and time and determining how healthy, how sound that horse is on that day. Really not a pass-fail type test, although I feel like a lot of people think that that's what it is. But it's really just us providing the owner or the buyer with as much information as we can about the horse to help them make a more informed decision about whether or not to purchase the horse.
I mean, I get trainers yelling at me because they're like, you failed my horse. And I was like, I didn't. I presented the information I found to the client who made an informed decision whether or not to buy your horse or not.
Exactly.
So trainers like to say, oh, that vet fails all the horses. And
yeah.
I'm like, well, maybe you just have bad horses you're presenting to me. I don't know. But there's some guidelines that we have that are just like we can get through some of the nitty-gritty before we do the exam. They should all be documented in a medical record.
Yes.
Right? So it should be written down somewhere.
Right.
And you as the buyer of the pre-purchase exam should be able to access that.
Right.
Usually within a day or two. It takes some time to get all the reports written. But
yeah.
You should have a full description of that. You should always have the time, date, place, and examination. It's very important. I think that's on top of our letterhead here.
Yes.
Is there anything else you'd like to put in to make sure you have?
I think we just report like our more abnormal findings, which doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be a problem. We just
mm-hmm.
have to report what we're seeing. So that's always in there, and then.
So I think some of the other things you want to make sure is that, like, I feel like I did a pre-purchase exam this week for some very nice people, and the trainer kept trying to tell me, but have me say to the owner, like, will this horse be good for like eventing? And I'm like, I don't know. The horse is sound today. It came out of the field yesterday, so. I don't put it in work for a little while. Maybe we'll come look at it. So I think we're not supposed to make like a business judgment of what the horse is used
right.
for. Now, that being said, sometimes if you are buying a second level dressage horse, I did a pre-purchase exam when I was in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
and the horse was listed in the sales post as suitable for husband horse. I said to the buyer, I says, husband horse in here, and I would agree with that assessment.
Right.
That's what was listed. I don't think second degree level is going to be this horse's job.
Right.
I was, I guess, borderline shouldn't have said that, but I felt like I was just reading the description of the horse
sure.
and like trying to bring that back to like, this is probably why this horse is not the right horse for you. Yeah, so we write all our medical records down. I think documenting everything is super important. We'll talk about all the additional tests and everything that we can run. And some of them are, you know, very important to do. So that's kind of all of it. And then I think the biggest thing too, the medical records of this exam, so this pre-purchase exam is owned by the person paying the bill. So even though it's your horse maybe getting a pre-purchase exam, you are not entitled to that information. Now, you can negotiate with the buyer
mm-hmm.
if you wanna, like, sometimes they're very transparent, sometimes they're not. Maybe they'll take some money off the bill. I don't know. That's up to you guys, but I can tell you that like, I'm legally and ethically obligated only to provide the information to the buyer. And I do know like a lot of times trainers will be like in all our conversations. So
right.
I go out back and make a phone call or bring them in my truck and like close the doors to get away
yeah.
from them so they're not listening to our conversation. Because I've had some clients, not clients, I've had some pre-purchase exams. They know the horse is lame, so they're just trying to figure out where it's lame.
Where it's lame.
They're doing it. They're making the poor buyer do a lameness exam for them.
Gosh.
Yeah, it was pretty bad, but
not okay.
So for me, most of what the pre-purchase is are. So when you're doing your physical exam, just kind of go through some of the basics so people can kind of make sure that these boxes are being ticked and like why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, so we're just taking a look at the overall horse, so we'll do a really thorough exam, both visually and with palpation, to see, you know, are there any old scars, is there any swelling, any thickening, what does the conformation look like of the horse, you know, palpation, and just list that down. We do look for, you know, old surgical scars, old wound scars, and we note all of that in the report as well. So that's kind of a full body assessment. And then both already talked about before this, but we both like to look in their eyes to make sure that there's nothing obviously abnormal there.
And I'm not doing a dilated exam. So I'm only, so we can't see the back of the eye. And then if there is any eye issues, so we can just see from the iris forward. And then if we see anything wrong, I might suggest you see an ophthalmologist. But I do take photos to put them in there so we can make sure the horse's eyes. And I also take photos, or try to take photos of some, like, the way the horse looks conformation-wise, especially if it's kind of towed out or towed in or, like, has bad feet or something. I always want to document that.
Yeah, and we make note of, you know, is the horse shod?
Mm-hmm.
If they are, how are they shod?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they have pads and, you know, all sorts of fancy shoes, and why do they have that? Is that an indication that they've had some lameness issues in the past? Are they barefoot? Try to do hoof testers if we can, depending on how the horse is shod. And then obviously we like to watch them move too.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, like you said, you know, that's not a dilated eye exam. We're doing all of this in a horse that's not sedated. So whatever we can do that's non-invasive is basically the beginning stage of the pre-purchase exam. So watching the horse move, doing flexion tests, would be the main things.
Yeah, and flexion tests for this way, like if I'm watching a horse go for lameness and I know these horses, I might just flex the hind end or like the hocks. But for this exam, I'm flexing everything. It takes a long time to do, and we have at Ohio State, we have a woman who's a wonderful jogger, Savannah.
Okay.
And and we try to bring Savannah with us because she likes running, she says.
Oh,
and
perfect.
Yeah,
she doesn't have to go work out that
she doesn't
day.
Have to go work out that day, so because it's gonna she's gonna run for at least 8 or 10 flexions per like side, so like 16 different flexions,
right?
Yeah. Do you lunge your horses first or after?
I usually lunge them after.
Okay.
What about you?
I lunge them after also, unless they're really, like, being an ass.
Yeah.
And then,
a little bit of...
Yeah, then I let them lunge first. And I always wonder, like, should I lunge them first? Because that's probably more accurate of what their life would be.
Right.
But I guess it just seems what I've always done habit-wise.
Right.
So.
And I don't know, I think about this more in lameness exams, but probably worth thinking about in a pre-purchase exam too, is just watching them move on different surfaces too, if possible. So the firm ground where there's more concussion versus soft ground where they're really having to stretch down might show different things.
Totally. Yeah, I always try to jog especially a little quarter horse on some hard ground to see how sore their feet are.
Right.
That being said, they don't run on asphalt.
Right.
But it is good to get a little, because we're trying to, you know, we're trying to see what could be happening in the future, but we can't predict the future. But if we see them being a little sore, like, on the asphalt, then, you know, maybe they're going to be sore going forward.
Right.
Yeah. And in tight turns and stuff like that. And I like to watch them canter on the lunge line.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And then listen to their heart afterwards to make sure that they don't have an abnormal beat.
Definitely.
Especially after exercise.
Definitely important. And it's also, that can help us just see how the horse handles, right? We watch him go on the lunge line, how easy are they to have, let someone jog them, all sorts of things, just taking into account the whole personality of the horse too.
Yeah, I have a little spot on my exam of like, if the horse is biting or kicking me,
yeah,
I write that down for the client, because I like when the client's there to see the horse and see the exam, but sometimes I have to report back.
Right.
And I'll report back, oh yeah, the horse tried to bite me every time I touched it. Or you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't know how to lunge. Like, one horse I had, like,
right.
didn't know how to lunge. And I'm like, well, okay. Doesn't right. lunge, so there was no lunge exam time.
Right. And there's only so much we can do with
yeah.
that.
Yeah, there's only so
instance.
Much. But I documented it and let them know. So that was important. Mm-hmm. So we have the lameness locator here at OSU. What is that? Let's for people that don't know what that is.
Yeah, so the lameness locator is basically an objective lameness assessment tool. So it comes with this little tablet and some sensors that you put on the head and right over at the top of the hind end and then on the right front leg. And what that does is it allows the system, there's these little basically gyroscopes in those sensors, and it allows the system to assess, you know, head movement. So when horses have forelimb lameness, they maybe have more of head movement. It assesses the hind limb move and pelvic movement, which can indicate a hind limb lameness, and then the sensor on that right front just tells the system, you know, what leg is what. And that gives us really nice objective data as to whether or not a horse is showing some sort of lameness. Because there's been lots of studies out there. There's one in particular where they, you know, got together all these really well-established, well-known lameness
gurus. Oh.
Lameness gurus.
Oh, the guru.
And their, you know, their agreement in looking at lameness in horses was not great.
Yeah, it was pretty poor.
It was pretty poor. So
yeah.
Trying to get more of an objective assessment for the buyer and something that's reproducible.
Yeah, and I think that's, so yeah, I think I have gone to only using the lameness locator for pre-purchase exams. Our second unit should be coming soon.
So exciting.
Yeah, and yeah, I think you can upload the data and someone can read it and they can, you know, we can help you interpret some of it. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah, it's reproducible. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, it's just not my like pure subjective opinion about the way I thought the horse moved.
Right.
And everyone has different grading scales. Like
right.
there is a standard AAP scale, but
right.
no one uses that. We try to, but
we try to, but there's so much gray area.
There's so much gray area,
between,
yeah.
So.
Like a three is anything we can see.
Right.
But
consistently, but like vary from
vary a lot. Like our students would call it zero. And someone more practiced might call it a three, right? But then people that have been around will like, oh, it's a two because it's not that great. And then so yeah, I think that's the hardest part is
yeah.
like, oh, it's a 3 out of 5 lame, but I try to quantify it like mild 3 out of 5
right.
or something like that. On soft surface. Something
yes.
like that. So
yes.
Yeah, so I think the lameness locator is probably what's gonna be in the future for every pre-purchase
mm-hmm.
exam, I would assume.
Yeah.
It's gonna be good, especially with horses moving across the country,
right?
It can here you go, here's your exam done. And their home veterinarian can help them decide what they want to do with the information.
Right.
So we have the exam kind of done for the most part. I would say 40 to 50% of my exams stop at this point because the horse is lame.
Right.
And the owner doesn't want to go forward. So
right.
I usually call them after this and tell them, do you want to go ahead and x-ray things?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to x-ray horses, we can talk about some common things that we see.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you like to, so say the client is just like, doc, x-ray everything.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, the old repository set,
right.
44, 45 x-rays or
right.
something. And that can be
expensive,
depending on what practice you are using. But even like the standard, I think is $50 an X-ray.
Right.
So 44, yeah. So it's $2,200 just an X-ray. If you're buying a $50,000 horse, it's probably worth it.
Probably worth it.
If you're buying a $10,000 horse, this is a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So what are you gonna tell them if they're like, okay, X-ray, what do you think the most important things are? So for you, if you're looking at, I'll give you two different breeds.
Okay.
All right, so we got a barrel horse, a big barrel horse.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably a quarter horse.
Mm-hmm.
So always good to look at front feet.
Okay.
Quarter horses can be those horses with navicular issues, which can also be a gray area as well, but
very
good
gray,
to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good to know what the feet look like. Hocks and stifles probably are important, and then potentially the carpus or the knee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, horses. They can bang that knee up pretty good.
Yeah.
So on feet with the quarter horse, they're probably going to have some navicular changes.
Mm-hmm.
They can be normal, though, right?
Right. Right. So it's like we said before, it's just a snapshot in time. So if the horse is sound, you know, maybe that's an incidental finding.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't guarantee that the horse will be sound tomorrow or the next day
right.
or in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
What we can at least say today, but with what we're seeing on these x-rays, the horse is sound.
Yeah. If it has, like, erosion on this flexor surface, though...
It's probably not going to be sound.
It's probably not going to be sound, unless they just injected it.
Right.
And that goes back to what we were talking about, too. Like, in the state of Ohio, legally, if I am doing a pre-purchase exam on your horse, your veterinarian is obligated to turn over all medical records to us because we are now the veterinarian in charge according to the Ohio Licensing Board. That's another thing to get all medical records to present to us ahead of time so we have some more information. It kind of helps us decide, oh, they've never injected the coffin joints. Perfect. Okay, well,
this
navicular bone is just a thing we found.
Right.
But, yeah. If it has the ones that scare me are the big cysts in the navicular bone. I feel like they're time bombs.
Yes.
Like they could go south.
They could go south.
Or they could just stay static.
Right. Right.
So, and then in hocks, what are you looking for in the horse's hocks?
Yeah, so it depends a little bit, but you can look for evidence of arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a young horse, look for OCDs. And then the other thing to look at is just sort of the conformation, like, you know, did this horse have like juvenile issues? So, you know, incomplete ossification of the cuboidal bones can sometimes change the shape of those bones in the hock and predispose them to having arthritis and things like that. So just kind of nice to see where they are. The hard part is sometimes radiographically, if you see arthritis or not, doesn't necessarily correlate well with the degree of discomfort.
That's the hard part with hocks.
In a horse.
Yeah. Because I feel like I've learned so much by putting those hocks into MRI,
mm-hmm.
and you see all the inflammation of the soft tissue around them,
right.
and you're like, oh, yeah, it has no arthritis, but like that fascia is just angry.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. So that's tough, but it is nice to have kind of that baseline, too, like if you don't see anything abnormal, and then there's something abnormal in the future.
But you'd want to know if the horse's hocks are starting to fuse.
Right.
Like that's like, okay, we know we might have to deal with some injections or something.
Yeah.
And then what about the stifle?
Stifles can be challenging, too, because, like, there's a lot of soft tissues there, too, so
mm-hmm.
it may not be just a bony issue if there is a problem, but looking for evidence of some arthritis, but also things like OCDs, cysts.
Yeah, because some of those cysts can be quiet,
mm-hmm.
and then they go bad. Yeah. So it's probably, if you have a yearling, and you're thinking of selling it, you should probably just have x-rays done, survey film done by your veterinarian, to make sure there are no OCD lesions,
right?
Because they're common in stifle and hocks,
right?
And in the fetlocks, and they can just be kind of removed, and the cartilage can heal a little before you sell them. So,
right.
It's always a good reason to X-ray the babies.
For sure.
X-raying the back. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's hard, and I know we talked about this in
mm-hmm.
the previous episode, but. In a horse that doesn't have any back pain,
you
see abnormalities in those radiographs, it's very hard to interpret if that's really an issue or not.
Yeah, I don't know how to interpret it. All right, so what if you have racehorse?
Racehorse.
Like a big stakes winner.
We definitely do some fetlocks.
Okay.
You can have some kind of changes related to training there. And then probably the carpus.
Yeah, they're going to bang their carpuses
they
up.
They do bang their carpuses.
Yeah, so I'd say, definitely front end and
mm-hmm.
then maybe hind fetlocks, hind hocks,
yeah.
maybe. But yeah, we're looking for like more like wear and tear, like how they're adapting their training
right.
type of disease.
Right.
And what about the old 15-year-old dressage horse? Like a big old warm blood.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, it's 15-year-old dressage. Maybe they just broke it last week. Who
right.
knows?
Yeah.
15. But.
Yeah. I feel like those horses tend to have more like stifle and even like more hind end issues.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel like potentially looking at front feet is important, but focusing a little bit on the hind like fetlocks, hock stuff.
Yeah, they get way more hind end, especially in that discipline. And then jumpers, probably like racehorses,
right.
like fetlocks and knees and
yeah.
feet, like they're pretty hard on their body.
Right.
So yeah, I guess it really depends on the discipline. But I guess for me, a minimum set is going to be front feed, hocks, stifles, what I would consider minimum. I mean, the client can choose what they want.
Right.
And we're also, like, I think is important, we're not cutting corners. We're taking 4 to 5 views per joint.
Right.
Like, some people will just take 2 views, but you can't see everything.
Right. You gotta have multiple views.
So we have our x-rays done, and everything looks pretty good. Now, on the farm, we can look at them, but I don't have a diagnostic screen. We can give you some ideas, but
right.
you need to be in a dark room to look at them with a, you know, a high definition monitor. And I always have the radiologist look at them here also, just for a backup opinion.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a radiologist look at them, but it's nice to have a little backup sometimes,
right.
especially on something that I'm uncertain of. What are some other things that you have done on your pre-purchase exams, like additional tests that you might have done?
Yeah, sometimes people want just some baseline blood work.
Okay.
Just that allows us to look at their red blood cells, white blood cells,
mm-hmm.
platelets, you know, make sure that those are all normal, and also can look at, you know, organ functions, so liver, kidney, muscle, etc.
Yeah.
Which is nice to have just sort of a baseline.
Yeah, I think baseline, especially if you're buying the horse, the baseline is going to be very important because you don't know what the horse is like,
right?
If it's, you know, had some disease and still has an anemia associated,
right.
or.
Right.
And then a Coggins test,
because
you might want to ship it across state lines.
Yes.
And you don't want them to have infectious equine anemia.
No, you don't want that.
So that would be a bad disease.
That would
to
be
have.
Bad. That would be bad.
Yeah. And then drug testing, what do you do for drug testing?
I honestly haven't done very much of it.
Okay.
But I know that you need to pull a lot of blood for
yeah.
drug testing.
You usually pull like 2. So I ask the client, and I have sometimes, like, if the client's not there, I'll pull like 2 red tops or tubes, and then I just kind of freeze it
mm-hmm.
and like wait 30 days and then throw it away after the 30-day time point.
Yeah.
There's Cornell and Arizona both have a lab that can detect it, and for a while Arizona was able to do the flufenazine, like the long-term trank, more precisely or a little less expensive too than the Cornell lab. So
nice.
And looking for NSAIDs, so bute, banamine, ketafin, Prevacox, looking for all those types of drugs, plus sedations.
Right.
So if you are the veterinarian, you're going to sedate the horse, maybe pull the blood work before you sedate it. Otherwise,
right.
you'll have a positive. and then the poor horse will have a detomidine positive. So, did you read that thing from AAP about xylazine might be controlled drug soon?
No.
Yeah, so I was reading about this, and it was only in Philadelphia for a while. So they're mixing xylazine and fentanyl together.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. Yeah, it's not good. And now it's in Massachusetts, and like a third of the drugs they don't are have fentanyl laced with, or opioids, so fentanyl and more, or heroin mixed with fentanyl and xylazine.
Oh my god.
So these people are taking it, and it has a street name because they know what it is, and then they just basically pass
they
out.
Just, I feel like that's going to kill people.
It's going to kill a lot of people. So the government's a little, you know, wants to regulate it better. But
yeah.
AAP the other day was like, well, maybe we should just focus on, like, drug addictions and, like, figure out where the drug's coming from. Like, I don't think we need to regulate. We use xylazine and detomidine every day.
Right.
So that would put a big a kerfuffle in our setup if
yeah.
we had to have that drug controlled.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah. And then I guess the people get some weird lesions on their bodies.
Really?
In their, but not in the injection site. So you could tell, like, a xylazine user, because their, like, skin gets all weird and stuff. Yeah.
That's
it was so strange. Yeah, it was in the Washington Post a couple weeks ago.
I'm gonna look that up.
Yeah, look it up. It's crazy. Yeah, you shouldn't be taking xylazine.
No.
It's gonna kill you.
Yeah, it's gonna kill
like
you.
Like, fentanyl, and that's the issue, right? So you have an opioid dose, overdose, the paramedics come off their Narcan, and they give them 2 doses, and they still don't wake up.
Right.
They don't pull, like, yohimbine off,
right.
off the vet truck and be like, oh, we can reverse the xylazine.
Right.
They don't know what that drug is.
Right.
So, no, it's not good. It's not good for the people, but it definitely could affect our industry a
yeah.
lot if people continue to
yeah,
do
absolutely.
This. Yeah. So the horses are not taking it for illicit purposes, but the human
yes.
might be.
Yes.
Okay, so drug testing, I think that's important. And then some heart stuff we can do, like a EKG and...
You know, particularly if you have any concerns when you're listening to the horse, but horse is going to be, you know, a high performing horse.
Mm-hmm.
It's not wrong to further evaluate the heart a little bit. Just costs more money.
Just costs a little more money. And then what about an endoscopic exam for an upper airway?
I think that it's probably most useful in horses that tend to have upper airway issues. So like race horses, maybe some barrel horses, draft horses.
Draft horses, big time.
Big time.
I bet you those pulling horses are worth a lot of money.
Yeah, well, they are. And they often have airway issues.
Because their neck's so long.
They're so long with drafts. Probably worth it. Concerns of the horse is making noise.
I think, yeah, especially if it's making noise at the canter,
right,
on the lunge line,
right,
we should scope that horse.
Right.
Okay. For a mare, if you want to do like a repro exam, that's not me. So I will confirm the mare has a vulva and a vagina. Because there was, did you hear about that case where a guy confirmed that the mare had ovaries or something and a uterus? It was a pre-purchase lawsuit. And but she was a hermaphrodite, so her clitoris was a penis.
Interesting.
Yeah, she couldn't get bred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see why.
Yeah.
I just had a case of that.
You did?
Yeah, it was a male pseudo-hermaphrodite, and she had, I guess, it was a girl. She had testicles right
mm-hmm.
in the location where ovaries would be.
Really?
She had a uterus.
Okay.
And then, yeah, she had like a vestigial penis where the clitoris would be.
Wow.
She came in for an ovariectomy.
Okay.
What we ended up doing.
Gonadectomy?
Yeah.
Testicular? Testicle-ectomy?
We basically castrated.
Castrated it. Okay. You castrated the girl horse.
Yeah.
Did you, was it testicles under, like, a microscope?
It just looked, and even grossly, they looked just like testicles.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool.
I wonder what her genotype is.
I know.
Like, what,
it's
I don't, like, X, Y, X, I don't know really how that happens.
I don't remember exactly, but yeah. So
what do they put down as show horse? Like, is it a mare?
I don't know.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Was it a racehorse? That'd be harder than a racehorse because there's categories of.
No, it was a Percheron.
Okay, so no one really cared.
Yeah.
Well, they can't breed her.
It was Amish owned.
Okay. Scent of our repro exam.
Yes.
I can put an ultrasound on there, look at some ovaries and a uterus, but if you want a breeding soundness exam all the way, you need to see a therio person.
Sure.
And the same for a stallion. You should
yes.
definitely see someone that specializes in semen collection and semen evaluation.
Yes, that's really important if you're trying
yeah.
to purchase a breeding stallion.
Yeah, that's not me.
No.
And then people talk about the dental exam. So, like, on my little sheet, I have dental exam, but I don't sedate them and put a speculum in. Have
right.
you done that?
Only if requested.
Okay.
But, yeah, not typically.
I don't think it's common.
No.
Maybe it should be. I don't know.
Probably should.
And then
enough horses with dental issues, but
yeah, especially maybe a middle-aged horse.
Right.
We should be looking around. But then, you know, like the other argument is we're just looking at the crown of the tooth, not the root.
Right.
So maybe we should be x-raying the mouth, too.
Right,
I mean,
if we're going
to go that far, x-ray the mouth might even be better than looking in there.
Right.
What do you do with that information? Like, we might have to pull a horse's tooth in a year or two. I don't know. So you can definitely go down a rabbit hole of
sure.
of this stuff. So.
And I remember as a child being in a barn and someone was buying a horse and, you know, they were asking about x-rays and
mm-hmm.
the veterinarian said, if I take this x-ray, is that going to change whether or not you're going to buy the horse?
Mm-hmm.
And they said no.
Yeah.
So they didn't take x-rays. So I guess the buyer just has to know what's important to them and what they need. And
yeah, I think that's really what the pre-purchase exam comes down to is
right.
like your risk tolerance. That you always know when the client shows up with the horse trailer attached, they're going to buy this horse no matter what I say. I mean, don't bring the horse trailer, right? Like, let's be a little more objective.
You can get it like an hour later.
You can get an hour later. Take the whole day off. I know gas is expensive, but still. No, I think that's a great point, right? If people are like, I'm going to buy this horse regardless.
Yeah.
I do think, again, back to baseline. Like, I've had some clients who have been like, this horse is amazing. I want it. Let me know what's going on so I know
right.
what to expect in the future or, like, know, like, oh, these hawks are... So that's okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think sometimes they're... Yeah, you need to know going into it, like, what your level of risk is.
Right.
And people have different levels of risks.
Totally.
And it's just, like, people in the stock market, right?
Right.
Like, some people are very cautious investors and some people are trying to hit it out of the park and be done. So, like, it kind of depends on how much your risk tolerance is.
Right.
Is Which is why it goes back to pass-fail is not a real term.
No.
Because it's not up to us. It's not. It's up to you.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing, is that we will present, you know, any abnormalities we're finding and, you know, what that could potentially do functionally in the mm-hmm. horse, but we're not... our role is not to tell you if this horse is going to be good for what you want it for.
Yeah. And I think you should work with your local veterinarian, if you're comfortable with them, to go over the pre-purchase exam.
Right.
Because I think they can take the information and help interpret it if they know you well.
Right.
They could be like, you Definitely. Know, like, I've seen 50 hawks like this, and we have to inject them, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Right? I can't say that during the pre-purchase exam. That is not my job.
Right.
But, which is why doing client pre-purchase exams can be easier, because you know the client, and you can
yeah.
have a little more leeway of like, yeah, I think this, we could manage this or not, type of
right.
thing. And maybe that's even beyond the line. I don't know.
Hard
but
to
it,
know.
It's hard to know, but I think it is helpful for them. And the other thing, too, with their pre-purchase, I forgot to say earlier, was we cannot do pre-purchases for horses we've seen in the past.
Right.
And that's a huge conflict of interest.
Right.
If you are looking for a veterinarian in a out of state, you want to really make sure that the veterinarian has never worked on that horse or doesn't really have any affiliation with that horse.
Right.
Veterinarian is also comfortable with lameness, right? Because there's some vets that don't want to do lameness. Just like, I think that's kind of wraps it up. So I would definitely tell people, good to get a pre-purchase exam.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think it's always good to at least know what you're getting,
mm-hmm.
and like you said, to have the baselines.
Yeah.
Because things happen in the future, and it is nice to, you know, maybe know that when you bought the horse, blood work was normal and now it's not, or,
yeah.
you know, something like that. That can be really helpful for the future, too.
And I think the old adage that I've always heard was the pre-purchase exam should cost no less than 10% of the value of the horse.
Right.
And I don't really know where that came from, but it kind of makes sense, right? If you have a $5,000 horse, supposedly, you know, when you're not breaking your budget to buy that $5,000 horse, like a good pre-purchase exam should be everything. But if you have a $50,000 horse, you're going to have some more risk with your $50,000. Maybe
right.
you need more information, taking x-rays and blood work and all that kind of
right.
stuff. So
right.
It's kind of all the thing I said. And then I read in Germany, they price their pre-purchase exams based upon the price of the horse.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know why they do that, those crazy Germans, but that's how they do their pre-purchase exams. So maybe it's a $5,000 horse. They're like, oh yeah, I think it's good for this level of work, and
right.
it's a $5,000 horse. Or if it's like, you know, $100,000 warm blood, they do everything.
Right.
I don't really know, but
yeah.
I heard him talk at AEP about that.
That's interesting.
And it's like dynamic pricing for pre-purchase exams.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to say the horse was $1.
Exactly.
Yeah. So maybe that might not work here. But.
Yeah, probably not.
And we're probably going to take the horse's shoes off
right.
to take x-rays.
Yeah.
Just so you're aware, we're going to pull the horse's shoes.
We're going to pull the horse's
so
shoes.
So you're going to need to get them tacked back on.
Right.
Because it can block the navicular bone. You can
right.
shoot around it, but it can be hard.
Yeah. If you want good radiographs.
Yeah.
Then.
Yep.
Worth the time to have someone at least take a look at the horse.
Yeah, and you guys do them here, right?
Mm-hmm.
In-house?
Yeah,
and then
do them in-house, and you do them in the field.
I do them in the field, and then when our lameness arena is built, they'll be there full time, and they can even ride the horse
exactly.
in the lameness arena,
exactly.
which is what it's supposed to be.
Right.
I've never done a pre-purchase game with a rider up.
Mm-mm, me either.
But I guess maybe if it was jumping like 3-6, we probably should want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, interesting.
Probably.
Something to ponder for the future. Well, thank you, Dr. Rice. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll have you back soon. We're going to have a little delay coming back. I have some vacation that I'm going to use up before
That's
it gets
good.
Taken away.
That's good. You got to do it.
Got to do it, and then we'll return. So thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. Hit the subscribe button. And leave us a good review on Google, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thank you.